two archaeologists are going head-to-head with questions set by members of Time Team for the ultimate bragging rights.
Will I beat Derek for the second time running?
Or will I finally get my own back?
The Time Team Christmas Quiz is back!
Okay then, Derek, are you back to lose again now?
Oh, I'm feeling very confident this year, very confident. I've been revising, I've been reading nothing but archaeology. I've got it this year.
This is fighting talk already. Well, look, Merry Christmas to the two of you. Derek Pittman is here. Helen is, of course, here. And we're doing a repeat of something that we did last year because it went down very well. It was the Time Team Christmas Quiz. Here is how it's going to work. I've got all the questions here, and they've come in from people who are involved in Time Team, some of which you'll know, some of which are behind the scenes. There's also some Time Team members who've been getting involved, asking some of the questions this year as well. And I have them all in front of me. 12 questions. There are actually 14 points up for grabs for reasons that you will find out a little bit later on. How are you feeling, Derek, ahead of this? Because we do have to say that last year you didn't take the win.
I'm feeling good. I'm willing to give it my best shot. But I also know I'm up against a very formidable foe.
I'm actually not normally a very competitive person, but I'm afraid as quizzes go, I do get very badly competitive. And although I don't mind coming second to a really good team in my village pub quiz kind of thing, there are only two of us, and so it's either succeed or fail this time. So I've really got my competitive shoes on.
Well, let's get on with it then. Dive straight in, because there are lots of questions to get through. Hopefully you can play along at home as well and enjoy this Christmas quiz. And let's have our first question.
Hello, I'm Naomi Sue Paul, Time Team's environmental archaeologist. And my question is, what is the magic ingredient that I use when processing soil to tackle clay?
So Naomi is working away. She's got some clay she needs to tackle. But what's the magic ingredient that she might be using? Helen, let's come to you first.
Oh, gosh, I have to say my mind is a bit of a blank. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to picture Naomi with her lumps of clay. And she does kind of mechanical things with them, doesn't she? Like she attacks them with maybe a trowel or something, or some kind of physical breaking up. The water is obviously going to break up to a certain extent. Then I'm trying to think what happens when you put clay. Clay is a degreaser. Might it be, this is a massive guess, might it be washing up liquid?
Washing up liquid, says Helen. Derek, what are you saying?
Oh, see, it's on the tip of my tongue. It's very annoying because I've seen Naomi do it. I've done it myself, and I know it's something that's commonly accessible in a kitchen at home. I've put bicarbonate of soda.
Okay, so we've got washing up liquid from Helen, bicarbonate of soda from Derek. Time to find out what the answer is. Naomi, what is it?
The answer is good old bicarb.
Oh, I have to say that is something I've made a mistake on before. Yeah, I'm feeling embarrassed now because I always use bicarbonate of soda to clean my cooker where I used to use washing up liquid. So I should have known that.
There you go. First blood to Derek. Mm. Feels good, doesn't it, Derek, to
Precious
be in the lead? All so right, much. Let's move on then. And this is one of a couple of questions, actually, we're getting from Time Team members. So if you are a Time Team member and you've been getting involved with this through Patreon, thank you very much indeed. Let's head over to Jeremy.
Hello, Helen and Derek. This is Jeremy from Time Team Testbit 3, Patreon member and Time Team fan. So my question is, which Time Team experts who are currently involved with Time Team were in the first ever episode of Time Team in 1994, not including Tony Robinson?
So we're looking for people who are in Time Team now. And to be honest, once you're in Time Team, you never leave Time Team. But people who you'll be seeing regularly now who were in the original, very first episode of Time Team back in 1994. And Derek, I'm going to come to you first for this one.
Oh, this is a real toughie. I'm pretty confident that Helen came a bit later on. I've got a vague memory of Helen appearing in my youth. but in terms of that very first episode, I'm pretty sure John was there, and I'm pretty sure Stuart was there. Carenza may have been, but I've got a sneaky feeling she came a little bit later. So I'm going to say John and Stuart and leave it at that.
John and Stuart. Helen, what are you saying?
Well, I just scribbled down the people I could remember from that first episode and then arrowed in the ones who are still around with Time Team today. And Carenza did start right at the beginning, I have to tell you, Derek. The other person who I think must have been there, we can't possibly have done without him because I do very clearly remember the geophysics, is John. So whether he had a short beard or a long beard or whatever he looked like, I don't have a clear picture of him, but I've got a very clear picture of the geophysics being spat out of the machine in the back of the Land Rover. So I'm going to go for Carenza and John.
And Derek, you're saying John and Stuart. All right, let's find out. Back over to Jeremy.
The answer, Carenza Lewis and John Gator.
Yes.
Have a great Christmas.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. There you go, then. There's the answer. Well done, Helen.
Yes, age scores over beauty there.
I was going to say, I was about 11 at the time, so my memory's a bit fuzzy.
This is good, though. This is a good little battle we got going on because it's one apiece so far as we move on to question number 3.
Hi, guys. Giselle here. And my question is, in 1991, Ötzi the Iceman was found in the Italian Alps. Which of these three things was he not found with? A bone needle, a bone comb, or medicinal fungus?
Have a little think about that then. Giselle was out in Italy investigating Ötzi the Iceman a little bit earlier on this year. But, and I'll read you the three things again here. Which was he not found with, okay? Bone needle, bone comb, or medicinal fungus? Helen, what do you think the answer is?
Oh, that is really, really tricky because one of the things that is very interesting about Ötzi was his clothing and how it was put together and what it was made from because it had a lot of grass in it, didn't it, rather than textile, but it also had skins, leather, that kind of thing. So I'm liking a needle. A comb, also, we also have heard a lot about from Ötzi about how he looked after himself. So I would have thought that he'd probably have a comb because he'd be interested in keeping his hair clean and tidy. But also the medicinal fungus, I'm sure that that would have come into it. So I have to admit here that I can't actually remember, but I think that the needle is ringing a bell because of our interest in the clothes. And I think the medicinal fungus, because he had a first aid kit, the comb seems a bit more like you could live without it. So I'm going to go for the comb. That is the one that wasn't found with Ötzi.
I'm going to keep things interesting and say bone needle. I think all of them could have been found with him. I think the fungus almost certainly. But, oh.
Here comes the answer then. Over to Giselle.
And the answer is a bone comb. Happy holidays.
Oh, thank you, Giselle. Oh, another point to Helen.
It's early days, though. It's early days.
This is going very well. How are you feeling, both of you, at the moment? Derek, how are you feeling?
Increasingly less confident.
Helen, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling that my memory isn't quite up to what I thought it was. I just have to hope that the logic keeps working.
Here comes the next question, then, and it comes from somebody who you might not recognise from seeing on Time Team, but they're definitely integral to making the whole thing work.
Hello, it's Hannah, one of the Time Team elves. And my question is, archaeologists found images of the Nativity in Roman catacombs. Can you let me know which century they were created?
We're looking for the century that those catacombs were created. Derek, what are you thinking?
I have absolutely no idea. So I'm going to pick a century out of thin air and say 2nd century.
Now, I was going to go for the 2nd century as well, because I think the 1st century is a bit too early. And the 3rd century, I was musing over what it looked like on the page. And so the 2nd, 3rd century is the 200s. So that's things like the persecution of Diocletian. And I thought, is that maybe a bit too late? But as Derek's gone for the second century, I think I'm going to go for the third. I mean, this is where the second one to come in. If we were at a real pub quiz, we would have to write it down, wouldn't we? And the arguments would be done before.
Well, you are meant to write it down.
Yes,
that
well,
is
I did.
What you're meant
I
to
did.
Do. You're not
I
meant
did.
To...
Look.
What, so what did you write
down?
What did
go?
You write down?
I wrote down?
Down
second century, but that seems like now.
Well, then
I'm,
you've got to go in second century. No?
All right,
so you can't
I'll go
change
with second
your
century.
Answer based on Derek.
No, I can't. You're absolutely down... right. I can't. I've written down second century. Yes, I would go for the second century too, because I think that's early enough, but not too early. And it's early enough to be exciting. So we know about it. Well, Derek and I don't know about it.
Well, let's go to Hannah for the answer.
And the answer is the 3rd century AD.
Oh.
Okay, so we both got it wrong.
You both got it wrong. But if yep. only you had been able to change your answer at the last minute,
yes.
Helen, and you would have taken
yes.
that point.
I would. Good thing you stopped me.
Oh,
it would have been a hollow victory, wouldn't it?
It
if
would.
You, if
it
you
would.
Had won there, because it would have, yeah, ill-gotten gains and all of that.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So current scores. Helen is on 2, Derek is on 1, and... we move on to a question from John Gator. Now, I ended up having to get 2 questions from John because this was the first one that I received from him.
Greetings from Orkney. My question. In 2025, at Brancaster, did Stuart Ainsworth leave the pub without paying his bar bill? The answer is yes, he did leave the pub without paying his bar bill. What's okay. new?
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Whilst a brilliant question, I thought maybe we needed something a little more serious. Now, this
and that's
one
a bit
that
unfair,
I did get
because I was actually in the pub at the time. So I did know the answer.
I feel like he was using the question as a way just to stick the oar in a little bit more with poor old Stuart. So I thought, right, no, John, you've got to give us a more comprehensive question than that. And this is the one he's come up with. Now, if you are just listening, by the way, I'm going to try and describe it because this is a sort of a visual one. So you do need to kind of be watching it. But if you are just listening, I will describe what John is talking about here in his question.
So my question is, where am I?
And I wonder, Helen, if you could maybe describe what you see there.
We're looking at some standing stones. John's by one. So at first you might think it's just one standing stone, but then the camera pans around and we can see a second one. So it's clearly a set of standing stones and we're by the water. I mean, maybe you're by the water everywhere, up where John lives in Orkney, but we certainly have a lovely landscape with water and green rolling hills.
Do you have any idea where he might be?
Well, I am guessing, based on the squarish shape of these stones, I am not an expert in Scottish prehistory, but normally I think you tend to see standing stones that are kind of smoothly rounded in cross-section, and these are very rectangular, very angular, and I think it's Callanish.
Derek, what do you think?
I know very little as well. The only time I've ever seen a stone circle that looks like that is in the fantastic movie Brave, and that doesn't help me at all. I'm going to just... pull some Orkney-sounding words out of my head and say Ring of Brodka.
Okay, let's find out where John is.
And the answer is...
oh.
The Stones of Stenness is where he was. Congratulations if you said that, because Helen and Derek didn't.
No, gosh, that's embarrassing.
Am I right in thinking that there are sort of certain stone circles that... they do kind of vaguely look the same because they all are just circles of stone? Or do they look sort of different from one another?
Well, I was thinking that maybe Callanish has more stones. It tends to be the one that's photographed more often than any other one, which is why it came to mind.
Without wanting to offend a whole host of Neolithic specialists, I kind of agree with Martin. Stone circles all look very similar to me.
Well, look, oh dear, dear. Very much the untrained eye here. I just thought, it's a stone circle. It's a circle of stones. But they're all in different places, I guess. So maybe we could have worked it out from that. But very good. A good question. I don't know which question I preferred, actually, the one about Stuart in the pub or the one about the stone circle. But very good. Thank you very much, John. All right, let me look on my list here. And yes, okay. So I thought after hearing from John, let's stay in the geophysics family and hear from another person who is regularly with John on his geophysics expeditions.
Hi, it's Jimmy from the Geophys team, and I have a question for you. If I was doing a ground-penetrating radar survey, what kind of soil would be my Achilles heel? Now, you've heard our excuses often enough, so you should be able to remember this one.
So what sort of soil might prove difficult for people doing geophysics? Derek?
It's a tough one, because I know what my Achilles heel with GPR is, but I don't know if that's going to be Jimmy's as well.
Okay, but what's your Achilles heel?
Well, I have, every time I've tried to do it, I've been on a very sandy site, and it's never worked particularly well. So I'm going to say sand is his Achilles heel.
Okay. Helen?
That's a good one. And I would defer to you, Derek, because, you know, you've got the farming background and so on. You know more about soil than I do. But I have to say that I wrote down clay. I'm not totally sure that I can justify that in any way, but that is what I wrote down.
And geophysicists don't necessarily, you don't see them going around with bicarbonate of soda either. So
that's true.
You know, maybe it relates to something Naomi's done. I don't know. Let's find out, though. Jimmy, what's the answer?
That's right. It's clay. Wishing you all a very Merry Christmas, and may your new year be free of horrible, sticky, GPR-sapping mud.
How sad that I admitted that I didn't have a single logical basis for that, and it was a pure guess.
But still, it got you the point, which is the main thing. All right, we have reached the halfway point now in proceedings, and the current scores are as follows. Helen, you are on 3, and Derek, you're on 1, but it is still very much all to play for. I thought we'd take a little break, actually, whilst we just sort of gather our thoughts. Last time we had a bit of a song, if you remember. We had like a poem about archaeology. Well, this time I thought we'd have some archaeology-related Christmas cracker jokes that I thought you might enjoy.
Brilliant.
So I'd just like your thoughts on these, okay? Archaeologists say Roman cement was stronger than it is now, but we need to see some concrete evidence.
Yeah. That is very good.
There's a few of these. There's a few of these. Why did the archaeologist ask a diamond out to dinner?
Don't know.
Because she likes carbon dating.
Oh, very good, very good.
My archaeologist colleague tried to blackmail me the other day. Turns out he has a lot of dirt on me.
That's a stretch, Martin. That's a stretch.
Okay, so I've got two more. Okay. How did the ancient Romans cut their hair? This is more a Romans one than an archaeology one, really. How did the ancient Romans cut their hair? With a pair of scissors.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. I was nearly there.
And it's always close, isn't it? And finally, how do archaeologists celebrate finding a leg bone? By going to a shindig.
Oh.
Oh, you saved the best till last.
I thought that.
Those are fantastic.
This is the Time Team Podcast in the middle of the Time Team Podcast Christmas Quiz, which is back for another year. Helen and Derek are back. They're going head to head. And last year, it was Helen that won. And at the moment, Helen is in the lead. She has 3 points to Derek's 1. But we still have 6 questions remaining, and one of those questions actually has 3 points available within it. So it very much is all to play for still. This is that question. So 3 potential points up for grabs here, and I'll explain how they work in a moment. But first, let's get the question.
Hi, I'm Stuart Ainsworth, and I'm Time Team's landscape archaeologist. Spent most of my life looking at lumps and bumps for a living. Anyway, I'm going to read some words that were written by a very famous antiquarian and author in a book. And here we go. He remembered the Templars to whom this site had belonged were in the habit of building round churches, and he thought a particular series of humps or mounds near him were arranged in something of a circular form. Interesting words. Now, the question. Who wrote those words, and what did he bring back from the past? And the supplementary question, if I may, what is the connection between my lumps and bumps and his humps and mounds?
I'll just go through it again to give you a little moment to gather your thoughts. So Stuart read a quote, and the quote was this. He remembered the temple as to whom this site had belonged were in the habit of building round churches, and he thought a particular series of humps or mounds near him were arranged in something of a circular form. Who said that? So that's a point. What did this person bring back from the past? That is another point. And then a third point up for grabs, if you can identify the connection between Stuart's lumps and bumps and this chap's humps and mounds.
So I'm groping about in my brain with not much success. And I'm remembering that Stuart took us all to Whittington. That had a Knights Hospitallers, not Knights Templars site on it, though. Knights Templars, yeah, the round churches. I wouldn't have forgotten something like that. What is he driving at? What did he bring back from the past? And who was it? So the fact that we're being asked who was it, it suggests it's somebody really famous. And he brought something back from the past that we can't have known about. So he must have discovered something. And maybe he built a new round church. Maybe we're dealing with some kind of, I'm really overthinking this, some kind of Victorian architect. And what are Stuart's, what have Stuart's lumps and bumps got to do with his mounds and humps? Okay, I'm going to go for something very unlikely, but I really can't think of anything. I'm going to say it's the Victorian architect Pugin, and the connection with Stuart is that he built a round temple-type church somewhere near where Stuart lives.
Have we got all three bits? So you need the person, you need what he brought back from the past.
Oh, he brought the round church back from the past. Yes, that's my answer.
And over to you, Derek.
I was hoping you wouldn't come to me. I'm obscenely
well, you're the only other one in the game, so we really do have to.
I'm definitely going to start promoting Lawrence for this next year. I have no idea, but I picked out some random thoughts that seem coherent in the context of the question. So I'm going to say the person is John Leyland. And the thing they brought back, just the only round thing I can think of, roundhouses. And the connection is John Leyland was one of the earliest cartographers, and Stuart is also a cartographer. At
okay.
Heart.
I've got a feeling that both of you are going to be quite bitterly disappointed. But anyway, Stuart, what's the answer, please?
And the answer is M.R. James, the famous writer of ghost stories. And those words were published in one of his stories called "Oh, Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad." Great, great read. Really, really scary. He unleashed a ghost when he did a bit of impromptu digging around those lumps and bumps. So very unwise thing to do. And what's the connection between my lumps and bumps and his humps and mounds? Well, his times two great-grandmother is my four times great-grandmother. Must be in the DNA.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Really, really great question. Of the three available points, both of you got none of them.
Zero.
Absolutely ludicrous.
I'm so cross with myself because not only did M.R. James grow up quite close to where I live, but I've also read that fairly recently because I often get whistles, silver whistles that come across my desk as part of the treasure process. And every time I have one, Angus says to me, watch out, you know, whistle it, you know, so don't blow anywhere near it, you know. So I go and look up the story and I had totally forgotten that it had a Templar church element to it.
I'll go through the answers now just so that if you were having a go at this at home, you can see whether you're right or not. So, yeah, the answer's M.R. James. The thing that he brought back from the past was a ghost, and I would have accepted anything to do with any sort of relation to Stuart. So if you just said Stuart and M.R., they're related in any way, I will give you the point for that. Very good. Doesn't change the scoreline in any way, though, as we move on to question number 8.
Hello, everyone. It's Penny. I have a question for you. Very sadly, in October, we lost archaeologist Mike Corwishley. He's known for a lot of work, including things he did at Wroxeter. However, there was one organisation in particular he set up. Can you tell me what the organisation is? Can you tell me what it was originally called?
This is Mike Corwishley, who we're looking for here. What did Mike Corwishley set up? What organisation? Derek?
I'm going to say the Young Archaeologists Club, but I have no idea what it was originally called, so I'm just going to say the Archaeology Scouts.
I have also written down, because he is connected in my mind, Mike Corwishley is connected with the CBA, so I also wrote down Young Archaeologists Club, and I was also absolutely baffled by what it might originally have been called. But the CBA had lots of committees and groups and so on, and I thought maybe it didn't have a particularly interesting name, so I've just written down Junior Section of the CBA.
Let's find out what the answer is. Go ahead, Penny.
How did you get on? In 1972, Mike Corwishley and Kate Pretty set up the Young Archaeologists Club, and it was originally known as Young Rescue. Hope you managed to get that right. Happy Christmas, everyone. Hopefully we'll see you all soon.
Of course.
Yes, and it was a good and imaginative one.
It was a good and imaginative one. I am going to give you both points for that. I think that's fair to give you both points for saying the Young Archaeologists. Well done, if you said that at home as well. So both get a point, which means Helen is on 4, Derek's on 2. Still time to catch up here, Derek. You do not need to worry. For our 9th question, we go over to another one of our Time Team members.
Hello, Time Team. My name is Rose, and this is my question for your festive quiz. What do you think the link is between our traditional penny and a Christmas pudding and the Romans?
So this is a tradition. I don't know whether they do this all over the world or not, but if you're having a Christmas pudding, very often, and this happens in my household as well, there will be some money put in the Christmas pudding to discover. What's the link there, Helen?
I have to say I don't know, but I'm tossing up between two guesses, and I'm going to go with the guess that... Now, you may say to me that this is Christmas presents in general, but I'm going to go with St. Nicholas, and I'm going to go with the legend that he was the first instigator of Christmas presents, in a sense, and that's why he became Santa Claus, St. Nicklaus, because he gave presents of gold coins to 3 girls to enable them to marry. That's the legend. And St. Nicholas was, I think... He was a Roman saint in about the 3rd century, a Roman bishop who was later sainted. So that's going to be my guess.
Well, it's excellent knowledge, whether it's right or not.
Thank you.
So we appreciate that. Derek, what are you saying?
I'm going to replace knowledge with misplaced confidence and say it goes back to the Roman god Vulcan, who was famous, of course, for his love of metallurgy and, by extension, coinage. But what many people don't know is he was a big fan of puddings, so he often snuck a little bit of metal into puddings.
And then set fire to them, perhaps.
Sounded great. That's all that matters. Okay, let's go over to Rose, who has actually quite a comprehensive answer for you.
So the Romans enjoyed a week-long festival called Saturnalia, and this festival originated from the ritual offering of gifts or sacrifices by farmers to Saturn, the god of agriculture. And alongside the serious nature of wanting your winter crops to do well, this was also a really great excuse for the Romans to make merry and have fun for an entire week. And the way they kicked this off was by creating a cake with a coin hidden in it. And whoever managed to find the coin in their slice of cake became the mock king. And the mock king's chief responsibility was mischief making. And that might include throwing insults to people, chasing them around the house or the villa, and wearing very entertaining clothing, and quite possibly throwing some scandalous parties.
That was so interesting. Yes. I learned so much from that. That was brilliant. And you know what? Helen, I'm afraid, definitely not a point for you. You were quite close, Derek.
I was not close. I could have at least gone for the right god.
I know, but it was, you know, you were on the right sort of lines, I would say there. Definitely on the right sort of lines.
Oh, I think that's right, that Derek was along the right lines, because I tend to get a bit of a narrow focus on Christian interpretations of Christmas because of being a medievalist. But if you draw back a little and remember that it was Saturnalia too, then, yeah, I hats off to you, Derek. I think morally, if anybody gets a millionth of a point there, it should be you.
Let's get on to question 10. We're nearing the end of this now. Question number 10 comes from our brilliant digger driver, John Beaver. John.
Uh-oh.
Hello, Derek and Helen. So, I have a question for you. On a 360 digger, what is a quick hitch used for?
Now, I think what he's saying there is quick hitch. So on a 360 digger, what is a quick hitch used for? Derek, how familiar are you with diggers?
Well, enough that it would be embarrassing if I got it wrong, sadly, which is sort of nerve-wracking. I am going to say it's so you can take the bucket on and off from within the cab.
Helen?
Well, my first reaction was that I don't know much about Quidditch, the Harry Potter game, but then I realised that we weren't talking
quick
about
hitch.
That. Yes, a quick hitch. Well, I wrote down, it is a quick hitch for the bucket, but it didn't occur to me that you might be able to do it within the cab.
Well, let's go over to John for the answer.
It's used for changing a bucket or an attachment without leaving the cab.
That is definitely a point to Derek. There is
Word
no
perfect.
Doubt about that.
Yep.
It's a bit of a cheat, really, because he's got one behind him in the picture. I could see it on there.
So could Helen. So could Helen. And she just used the word that he'd already
the
said.
The word, yes. The quick hitches quickly. Yes, I'm afraid so.
That's definitely a point to Derek, which means you are closing in with two questions to go. Derek, if you get these two right and Helen doesn't, then you've done it, all right? Here we go. And this comes in from our brilliant producer, Karen, who had worked very, very hard on producing the episode that was out quite recently, actually, about Sir Nabus. Have a listen.
Wonderful episode.
So my question to you relates to the film that went out in November on the Sir Nabus giant and the monastery that was being excavated below his feet. So what I want to know is which famous king ransacked the abbey, allegedly in the 11th century, and then probably felt very guilty about it and became a benefactor in later years.
So this is Sir Nabus related. Helen, any idea?
Right, well, I have watched this. And for some reason, it's not stuck in my memory. I'm going to make a guess of Cnut, because he came over with his father, Swain Forkbeard, and did a lot of ransacking. But then he was very famous for re-establishing monasteries. So although I am not going to claim any knowledge on the part of Cern, I think I'm going to suggest him because he's generally the most famous benefactor of 11th century monasteries, and he is in the 11th century because he's about 1016 onwards. Yes, so I'm going to plump for Cnut.
I'm going to go a little bit later, and I only really know one 11th century king anyway, so I'm going to say William the Conqueror.
William the Conqueror and King Canute. What's the answer, Karen?
The answer to that question is the very famous King Canute.
King Canute is the right answer, Helen. Well done. Phew. Which means you have now an unbeatable lead.
Oh.
Which means you have done it for old Derek.
For old Derek. Two for two.
I know. Shall we just get the final question just to make sure we've done it properly? And because it is a really good question as well. And also, Derek, I'm hoping you might be able to get a little bit of glory back from answering this one. Oh. So for the final question, let's head over to the boss.
Hello, everyone. Emily here, producer-director on Time Team with cuddly Mick and a ridiculous hat on. Anyway, on with the question to Helen and Derek. During our recent Time Team episodes at Sutton Hoo, season one, Helen took on a different job as a camera person on a boat. And during her time, she challenged Derek and Lawrence to explain a particular word. So, can you tell me what that word was? And maybe for an extra bonus, you could tell us what it means.
I'm not going to give you an extra bonus for saying what it means, for reasons that will become clear when you hear the answer. But you do get a point for, well, if you can remember the word. Any idea, Derek?
I remember it well, actually, because I remember flapping around to remember what it meant at the time, and I'm sort of hoping you're not going to make me do it again. And it was phenomenology.
Phenomenology? Helen, is that what you've got?
Yes, I'd written down phenomenological.
Oh, hold up. You've written phenomenological.
I think Helen's right, actually.
Phenomenological.
So we've got phenomenology and phenomenological, which both of them are quite difficult to say. What is the answer then?
The word was phenomenology, easy for you to say, and I'm not going to try and explain what it means, so hopefully somebody else did. Anyway, have a lovely Christmas. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Thank you, Emily. Phenomenology was the right answer, not phenomenological, which means Derek gets that final point. Helen doesn't, but go on, Helen. What does the word that you couldn't remember what it was mean?
Phenomenology is the study of how you feel in the landscape. I don't know why it's phenomenon, but if you're having a phenomenological experience, you're maybe standing somewhere feeling an emotion or an affect, maybe the psychologists call it. So you might be looking out of a balcony and feeling like you own the whole town because you can see it all. Or you might be standing in a dungeon and feeling like you're absolutely the lowest of the low.
I'd like to experience it immediately. Well, look, that is the end of the quiz. Final scores, Helen on 5, Derek on 4. So it ended being very, very close indeed. But for another year running, Helen is the victor. So we do owe her a round of applause. Come on, Derek. We've got to give her a round of applause. Well done, Helen. And thank you so much to both of you for playing the Time Team podcast Christmas quiz. It was very, very good fun. And we're all geared up and feeling Christmassy now, aren't you, Derek?
Very much so. Even though I threw my hat on the floor in pure rage.
Even though the rage got to you. And Helen, how are you feeling about your sweet, sweet victory?
It is a sweet, sweet victory, I have to say. I really didn't think at one point during this unbelievably hard quiz that I was going to be able to just edge it over Derek again.
Well, well done to both of you. Well done to you as well. If you've been playing along at home, do write down, if you're watching this, write down in the comments how many points you got as well, and you can compare how you got on to Helen and Derek. That is it from this edition of the Time Team podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a very Merry Christmas. Next week, we're looking at some of our favourite moments from the podcast in 2025. We're looking forward to that. From me, from Helen, and from Derek, a very Merry Christmas, and we'll see you soon on the next edition of the Time Team podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.